So welcome, everybody. Welcome to this bi-monthly conflict-free leadership call hosted by the National Physicians Alliance as part of its unbranded doctorate project, which takes place under the Partnership to Advance Conflict-Free Medical Education, affectionately known as PACME grant. I'm Rachel DeGolia, facilitator for this call and a board member of the National Physicians Alliance. In my day job, I direct the Universal Healthcare Action Network. We've had quite a few people pre-register for this call. I think we're going to have a good mix of physicians and faculty and students from across the country. So again, if you've just joined us, please press *6 to mute your line. That way everybody can hear better. Okay, just a brief word, a little background on the PACME project, under whose auspices this call is taking place. The grant is the result of a state attorney general settlement regarding the inappropriate marketing of the drug Neurontin. Partners for the grant include the National Physicians Alliance, American Medical Student Association, Community Catalyst, and the Pew Charitable Trust. The goal of the project is to reduce conflicts of interest created by the pharmaceutical industry in the medical profession and medical research. And the partners on this grant promote a number of approaches to raise awareness on this issue and to build leadership in the medical profession to eventually eliminate some conflicts. And, of course, these calls are one of those approaches. So our topic today is creating public transparency of industry-physician-financial relationships. We're going to hear how CMS is implementing a section of the Affordable Care Act known as the Open Payments Program. Our featured speaker is Tula Bellios, Director for the Division of Policy and External Partnership in the Data Sharing and Partnership Group at the CMS Center for Program Integrity. Tula is responsible for program campaign strategy and execution, content program content development and diffusion, and partnership outreach and coordination. She's been with CMS since 2009 and previously worked on special projects for the Deputy Director for Operations of the Center. Before joining CMS, Tula was an associate with Mercer Human Resource Consulting in Baltimore, where she managed healthcare benefit projects and developed long- and short-term benefit strategies for both local and nationwide clients. Just a quick word about the format for this call. Again, for those who just joined us, please press *6 to mute your line. That way we'll all hear better. After Tula's presentation, which will be approximately 20-25 minutes, we will throw the floor open for Q&A. And joining Tula in responding to questions and participating in the discussion will be Daniel Carlett, MD, who is director of the Pew Prescription Project, as well as a psychiatrist. And he will share information about additional resources and new tools designed to reduce conflicts of interest at academic medical centers and in the medical profession. And now, before we start the presentation, just a few words from Ann Wollison, who is Director of Education for the National Physicians Alliance. Ann?
Thank you, Rachel, and thank you to our two speakers. Looking forward to hearing from you in just a minute. I want to thank everybody on the call for joining us today, and I wanted to let people know and remind others that the National Physicians Alliance has several resources available to physicians and medical students as part of this project, including national grant rounds and bimonthly calls that are archived on its website www.npalliance.com/conflict-free. These resources So they offer a variety of issues related to conflict of interest, and some of our national grant rounds actually provide CMEs, which physicians can access after viewing or listening to one of our national grant rounds that are archived at the website. There are a total of 8 national grant rounds and 12 bi-monthly calls, and if you haven't already, you should definitely check out our last national grant rounds that took place at AMSA's annual conference or convention last month in New Orleans, Agents of Change, Empowering Students to be Leaders in Conflict of Interest Policy Reform, which featured Dr. Steve Smith and Dave Evans, who are members of NPA, who talked about their personal experience with COI and their work to reduce early on the potential for COI. conflicts of interest in medical practice. And the Grand Rounds also featured Wells Wilkinson with the Prescription Access Litigation Project, which is part of one of our partners, Community Catalyst, and Teddy Fragrelius, who is the Pomfrey Fellow with the American Medical Student Association. So I just want to remind you that those resources are archived online on our website, and urge you to check them out. This call and a copy of the presentation will also be available at www.npalliance.org/conflict-free. So again, check out our resources. I'm going to stop there and let Rachel once again just invite our speakers to get started. Thanks, everyone.
Hey, thank you, Ann. And let me just say, because of the number of people on the call, we have had some questions already submitted via email for our speaker today. So we invite you at any point, a question or comment occurs to you, to email it to Ann Wallerson. Ann's going to collect these, and hopefully we'll get to at least most of them in the Q&A part of the call. And let me announce Ann's email at Jimmy Agenda that was sent out, but I'll say it here again. Ann.Wallerson@ntalliance.net. That's Ann.Wallerson@ntalliance.net. Please feel free to send your questions to Ann at any point as they occur to you during the presentation. And now I am very pleased to welcome Tula Bellios to tell us how CMS is promoting transparency in industry physician financial relationships. Welcome, Tula.
Thank you so much for that great introduction. I'm really excited to be here today, so thank you, everybody, for having us, and hopefully you guys will learn something new about CMS and the type of programs and resources that we are developing and have developed. So first off, open payments. Just want to give you some background. It's commonly known as the Sunshine Act. Many of you, I'm sure, have heard that referenced by pharmaceutical companies and press. And such out there. Again, it's the Sunshine Act. We've called it, we're calling it open payments. This is stems from Section 6002 of the Affordable Care Act. And it went through this program essentially creates transparency into the financial relationships between physicians and teaching hospitals and industry and manufacturers. So I believe, Ann, everyone has the presentation that I sent out yesterday. Is that correct?
Did you email it out, Ann?
No, we will be posting that following the call.
Okay, I wasn't sure if I needed to reference slides. I apologize for that break. So essentially, industry and physician relationships exist and will continue to exist. And we strongly believe that collaboration between industry and physicians is also a good thing. It leads to innovation. It leads to discovery of new healthcare tools and drugs and resources. But we also believe that such relationships can also lead to possible conflicts of interest. As such, financial relationships could influence professional judgment, and conflicts of interest can arise. This stems, as I mentioned, from Section 6002 of the Affordable Care Act. The final rule was finally published in February of 2013. This is after over a year of rulemaking of the NPRM that was initially published, and we received over 400 comments specifically to the NPRM. The objectives of the program is really to create, for the first time, a national transparency program requiring certain manufacturers and group purchasing organizations to disclose their financial relationships between physicians and teaching hospitals. There are states and other folks out there that have tried to do very similar things. Unfortunately, it's not the same scale that we are embarking on. The objectives of the program is, again, as I stated, transparency, and to give consumers the information they need to ask questions and make informed decisions about their healthcare professionals.
Tula, I'm sorry to interrupt. If I could ask people to please *6 to mute their line, cut down the background noise. You can then later in the call press *6 to ask your questions. Sorry for the interruption.
No worries. So So the CMS's role in all of this is really to remain neutral in this whole process and to make this data available on a public website. And we, our role is also to ensure that reporting and disclosure is complete, accurate, and clear. CMS is not passing on any judgment as to whether or not these transfers of value were good or bad. We are remaining neutral. And right now I want to spend a few minutes getting diving into a little bit of the weeds about program requirements. Applicable manufacturers of covered products and entities under common ownership with applicable manufacturers who also provide assistance and support are required to annually report to CMS payments for other transfers of value made to covered recipients and physician owners and investors, and also are required to report to CMS certain ownership and investment interests held by physician owners or investors or their immediate family members. In addition, applicable approved purchasing organizations are also required to annually report to CMS certain ownership or investment interests held by physician owners or investors and their immediate family members, as well as payments or other transfers of value made to those physician owners or investors. Now, as I mentioned, in those, what the program requirements, that if you had heard or didn't hear, I should say, there is no reference to Medicare, Medicaid, or CHIP. This program goes beyond Medicare, Medicaid, or CHIP. It applies to all physicians and teaching hospitals, all physicians out there, not just those that accept public, participate in public forums, public programs. The rule is very specific about how it defines an applicable manufacturer. An applicable manufacturer must operate in the U.S. and participate in specific functions in order to be considered an applicable manufacturer. This includes the production, preparation, propagation, compounding, conversion of a covered drug, device, biological, or medical supply. And this also includes distributors of wholesalers that hold title to a covered drug, device, or biological, or medical supply. A covered drug, device, biological, or medical supply must be reimbursed by Medicare, Medicaid, or CHIP. And it must require a prescription to administer, and for any devices or medical supplies, it requires a pre-market approval or a pre-market notification by the FDA. Applicable group purchasing organizations have a very similar but slightly different definition. They must also operate in the U.S. They purchase, arrange for, or negotiate the purchase of a drug, biological device, medical supply for a group or individual or entity, but not solely for the use of the entity itself. The covered drug, device, biological, or medical supply must be reimbursed by Medicare, Medicaid, or CHIP, and for drugs and biologicals are required the prescription to administer, and for any devices or medical supplies requires pre-market approval by or pre-market notification to the FDA. Now, covered recipients can be either a physician or a teaching hospital. The rule is very specific. A covered recipient physician are doctors of medicine, osteopathy, dental surgery, dental medicine, podiatric medicine, optometry, and licensed chiropractors. And they must all be legally authorized by the state to practice. This rule of fellows are included in the definition of a covered recipient, and medical residents are excluded from the definition of a physician. The rule was also very specific in how it defined a covered recipient for a teaching hospital. These include any hospitals that CMS has recorded as receiving a payment under Medicare Direct Graduate Medical Education, Indirect Medical Education, or Psychiatric Hospital IME program. CMS must post on an annual basis a complete list of all the teaching hospitals that must be reported upon. And just to be clear, physicians and teaching hospitals are not submitting any data to CMS. This responsibility falls solely on applicable manufacturers and applicable GPOs. Now, there are three types of payments out there that the program captures. They can be paid directly to physicians and teaching hospitals, also known as direct payments. They can be paid indirectly to physicians and teaching hospitals, commonly known as indirect payments. And the program will also collect information on payments designated by physicians or teaching hospitals to be paid to another party, known as the third-party payment. What physicians can be doing right now to track and review their information, physicians should be tracking all their interactions that they have with industry involving payments or transfers of value to ensure accuracy. In addition, they should register to preview the data that will be made available to the public, and I'll talk about that shortly. And you should also be aware of the tools and resources that are available to help you track this information and help you understand more about this program. So when industry will be submitting data to us, they're going to be submitting specific information about the physician to us about these interactions. First off, they're going to be providing us with the full legal business, your full legal name as it appears in NPES, your primary business address, your NPI as it appears in NPES, your state professional medical license number or numbers, and your email address. Other information that will be reported by industry is information about the covered product that was discussed during this event or during this transfer of value, the names of any related covered drugs, devices, biologicals, or medical supplies, information about the payment itself, such as the amount, the date, the form of payment, the nature of payment, or other transfer of value, the number of payments that were made, and if it was designated to go to a third party, the name of the individual or entity that the physician indicated to receive the payment. So when I mentioned before in terms of the form of payment, this implies how the payment was made to the physician. Was it in terms of cash or cash equivalent, in-kind items, stocks, dividends? In addition, the nature of the payment is something that will be forwarded to us as well. This could be, there are about 16 natures of payments. I might have my number off, but I believe that's the correct number. This includes consulting fees, honorarium, gifts, entertainment, food, beverage, travel and lodging, education, research, just grants, anything in general on their specific, and I encourage you to go out to our website to learn more. But there are multiple reasons why the physician receives a payment, and this information will be shared with CMS. Something that I want to also bring your attention to is continuing medical education. This was something that was very specific in the rule, and it is handled, as we know, industry out there sponsors a lot of continuing education material for healthcare professionals. So the rule recognizes that and is very specific as to when it is reported to CMS, and it varies depending on whether it's something considered an accredited or certified event, or if it is if you are a speaker or an attendee at the event. Now, if you are a speaker at a continuing medical program or continuing education program, industry is involved in it. This is not required to be reported to CMS if it meets the following three conditions. If the program meets the accreditation or certification requirements and standards of the ACCME, AOA, AMA, AASP, or ADA CERP. The second criteria is that the manufacturer does not directly pay the physician speaker. And lastly, the manufacturer does not select the physician speaker, nor does it provide the third-party vendor with a distinct, identifiable set of individuals to be considered as speakers for the accredited or certified continuing education program. Again, if an event meets all of those three criteria and you are a speaker, this is not reportable to CMS. If you are an attendee of an accredited or certified event, meaning it meets those three criteria, this event or transfer of value, if it relates to an indirect payment associated with that activity, such as any meals, travel and lodging, or any educational material, those transfers of value will be reported to CMS. And again, if it's a non-accredited or a non-certified event, meaning it doesn't, those three criteria I just read out do not apply, whether you're an attendee or a speaker, this event will be reported to CMS, as well as any indirect payments associated with this CME activity. So let me tell you a little bit, take a minute to talk about the operations of the program. The program industry was required to start collecting data August 1st of 2013. Between August and December 2013, industry was tasked to collect this information about payments and other transfers of value, as well as ownership and investment interests held by physicians and their family members. In February of this year, we began phase one of data submission by industry, and by March 31st, industry was required to submit our GET data. We're going to be announcing in the coming weeks when phase two of data submission begins, as well as the end date. Regardless, through second or third quarter of 2014, industry will be working with physicians to make any corrections to any disputed information. So as I mentioned earlier on, what physicians should be doing are tracking their information and their interactions with industry. In the next couple of weeks, and we'll again be making announcements soon, physicians are strongly encouraged to go into our system and register into the system and then be able to and then review and dispute any information that is submitted about them. Physicians, I just want to make sure that this is clear, physicians are not required to do anything. However, we strongly encourage all physicians and teaching hospitals to register and review and dispute any information they think is not accurate, as this information will be publicly posted on a CMS website. Physicians are not able to conduct review and dispute if they are not registered within the system. And then finally, we will be posting this information on September 30th, 2014. There is no deadline for registering within the system, and there is no start date for physician registration in subsequent years or as registration, ongoing registration, for example, for the following year and so forth. CMS has made a great effort in terms of outreach and engagement with stakeholders about creating awareness, providing useful and easy-to-understand information, as well as providing tools that will support stakeholders. We've done a number of national provider calls where we are engaged with professional organizations just to make sure they are aware of what's going on in terms of the program and using multiple listservs to get our message out. Some of the tools and resources that are available for physicians to use, we have a dedicated webpage for stakeholders to learn about the program. We've issued two continuing medical education modules for physicians on MedScape. We've also have two brochures available for physicians to download and review. One is for their own information about the program, and the second one is to share with their patients if they are starting to receive any questions from their patients about what this program is. But the coolest thing that we've been able to do, and this was a first for CMS, is put out two mobile apps for physicians and industry. The mobile apps are free. You can find it on the mobile platforms for Apple and Android. And they're essentially used as a personal information collection and storage tool only. So we highly encourage you to go out and download. I'm sorry, can you guys still hear us?
Yeah, we can hear you.
I apologize. We're having bad thunderstorms and all the lights just went out.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm glad I'm getting towards the tail end of my presentation. The mobile apps are free, as I mentioned, and they're a personal tool to use when you are to track your transfers of value. So again, we encourage you to go out to your app store, download it, search on Sunshine or Open Payments, and these apps are basically a fancy way of keeping track of paper and pencil, keeping track of your payments or transfers of value that physicians may use. You're able to store your personal information on there, such as your license numbers and NPI, something that's, as I mentioned earlier, that industry will be collecting and submitting to us, so you're able to have that stored in your handheld device, and that the mobile app is, just want to mention that there are a number of security codes, safety features on it, so you don't need to worry about that. But also note that the apps do not communicate with CMS at all. This is just for your own personal use. You're able to store who you met with within industry, their contact information, the date of the event, why you met, the products that were discussed, and such. So this, and you're able to also export this information for the entire year or period, however you want to do that, and use this as a reference tool. So when you do come into our program after you've registered, you can compare what industry has submitted about you against your own record. So with that in mind, that's really everything that I wanted to share with you about our program. Our help desk email address, if you do have any questions, is openpayments, one word, plural, at cms.hhs.gov. And also our website is http://go.cms.gov/openpayments. Again, one word, plural. That's really all that I had to share right now, Anne.
All right, thank you very much, Tula. The Open Payments website is also in the agenda. People can notice it right under the ROTP button. Go ahead, Anne.
Yeah, that was really great. Thank you, Sheila. Appreciate it very much. And I do have some questions, but before I start running through those, Dr. Carlott, I believe, is on the phone, and I wanted to just give him a minute to introduce himself and maybe just talk really briefly about some of the work that he's been doing as Open Payments is being implemented.
Yeah, sure. Did I unmute myself?
Yes, you can hear me. Right.
Okay, good. So thank you for inviting me, and also thank you for Tula for that presentation. I'm the director of the Pew Prescription Project, and some of you on the call, probably most of you on the call, know a bit about my background of being a psychiatrist and having given talks for industry in a prior lifetime. And then having had a kind of a crisis of conscience about the appropriateness of that kind of financial relationship with industry, which really led me, probably about 10 years ago, led me into becoming quite involved in writing about these topics, blogging about them, and then eventually, about 2.5 years ago, taking this job with Pew, where I could be in Washington and sort of be at the epicenter of some solutions. And one of the, you know, really the Sunshine Act and the Open Payments website is one of the greatest pieces of the solution to restoring the integrity of the medical profession and restoring trust in the relationship and the necessary relationships between doctors and the pharmaceutical industry. So just a couple of specific things that listeners might be interested in hearing that we've been involved in. One is that Pew, beginning last July, began meeting with industry and with consumer groups as a kind of we would call it the Open Payments website work group, but as a way of industry and consumer groups sitting down and thinking about how the Open Payments website should look when it comes out. Because what's going to happen is that, you know, a patient will sit down, punch in the name of their doctor, and they'll see, Dr. Carlott received $5,000 under the category of compensation for services other than consulting. including serving as a faculty or as a speaker in an event other than a continuing medical education program. And that's actually the full title of one of the categories. Probably a lot of you wouldn't necessarily know what that category refers to. So you can imagine that consumers out there are really going to have a hard time understanding the nature of some of these payments and what they refer to. So we've gotten together and tried to come up with very clear language, basic, simple language descriptions and explanations of some of these categories, as well as some concrete examples of how docs take the money and what they do with it and why they're taking it. I believe in February, we sent those recommendations to CMS officially, and then we had a follow-up call with them. I think Tula was there, and Anita Gleiner, who's the current director of the program. And then we plan to have a follow-up meeting to that phone call in an in-person meeting to further discuss ideas for how to really add some very concrete language to the website to make sure consumers don't automatically assume that all the payments are inappropriate, but we also don't want them to believe that all these payments are completely wonderful either, because there are some of these relationships that clearly can cause conflicts of interest that can affect medical practice. So that work group is one of the things that we've done. And then the second thing of interest is that Pew, 2 years ago, we put together a best practices work group, and we published in the Journal of the American Medical Association in December 15 best practice recommendations for academic medical centers that want to improve their conflict of interest policies. So these are recommendations that have a direct impact on what will be reported in the Open Payments website, because these are relationships like physicians being on speakers bureaus and being paid by companies for that, doctors being given meals, gifts, various interactions with medical device reps and pharmaceutical reps. So there's a whole range of industry physician interactions that we have made recommendations on, and these were sort of follow-ups to earlier recommendations that have been out there in the community that were made by the Association of American Medical Colleges in 2008 and the Institute of Medicine in 2009. And our recommendations kind of went a little bit further, and they're a little bit more stringent, because over that time we've seen more and more data in the research literature showing that when doctors have marketing relationships with the pharmaceutical industry, that it's very clear that their practice and their prescription practices tangibly change in the direction of prescribing more drugs and more expensive brand name drugs. So those recommendations are available online, on the Pew Prescription Project website as well. We have a longer report where we not only list those recommendations, but we have the research base behind them and some of the issues that we talked about in our expert task force. So those recommendations and then the recommendations we have for CMS's Open Payments website are two of the major initiatives that we've been involved in recently, and we hope to continue to work very closely with CMS to make sure that when the website comes out that it's successful and that it continues to improve the culture of medicine.
All right. Thank you very much, Dan. I know now I'm going to ask Ann to share with us a few of the questions she's received via email either during the call or in advance of the call. Let me just announce her email address one more time, ann.wolosson@mcalliance.net. And we're happy to entertain questions for either Tula Bellios or Dr. Carlock. And we hope that everyone will take away not only information but also inspiration and ideas that will help you act on what you learned today on today's call. All right, Ann, what do you have for us?
Hi. Well, let's
let's start with one that I believe was covered, but just I have a request for clarification. So basically the question is, when will payments be publicly available for August 1st, 2013 through December 31st, 2013? And will those dates be, will you be able to access that information on the gocms.gov open payments website?
Sure, I'll take that one. Thanks, Dan. Yes, we will be, any data that is, so any data for the period of August 1st, 2013 through December 31st, 2013 will be publicly posted to the CMS website on September 30th, 2014. So you will be able to access the data from our website.
Okay, thank you. Another question that I received is, do I, as a physician, or I guess do physicians, have any responsibility for making sure payment information is provided, and what, if anything, should physicians do if they become aware that payments have been made but not reported?
That's a really good question, and thank you for submitting it. First off, physicians are not, the rule is very specific. Physicians are not required to do really anything in terms of compliance with this rule. This rule is requires a lot of the burden to be shouldered by industry. So the only thing that we do encourage physicians to do, and again, this is all voluntary, because this data is being publicly posted to a public website about any payments or transfers of value that have been made to a physician, and it's down to the physician level, we strongly, because this is personal information to a certain extent about what payments you've received, we're highly encouraging physicians to go out there and review the data so that any data that is published is accurate. We don't want there to be any misrepresentations, and that is something that CMS cannot validate, whether or not physician X received $100 from this company. We can't validate this. We're taking it on the word of industry that this occurred. So if a physician, we highly encourage physicians to go out there and to validate that these actions took place and such, and to do so. That's really what, and again, it's all voluntary. That answer the question?
Yeah. And again, going back to, this is just Anne sort of interjecting a question, and you finalized it by saying it's all voluntary. So can you just clarify that statement?
Right. The physician's role is voluntary. They are not required to validate the information or register with CMS, but we're highly encouraging physicians to do so.
Okay, that's great. Thank you. And I don't know, Rachel, did you have something you wanted to add or ask?
I want to make sure it's clear to everybody. How do they actually do that? Does it happen before it goes public on the website or not until after it's public on the website?
Great clarifying question. The data is available to physicians for preview prior to public posting.
And in order to remind us again, how do they get access to that? Just one more time.
Not a problem. Right now, they don't have access to the system. What we are asking is that you register for our listserv, and you can sign up right on our webpage, on the landing page itself. You can sign up for our listserv message, and we will be sending out listserv messages notifying subscribers of when physician registration opens. And then subsequently when review and dispute is open as well, and how to go about doing that. We also rely heavily on our listserv message to give subscribers updates about the resources that are available, tutorials about how to register, step-by-step screenshots of the process and such. So, again, we highly encourage you to register for our listserv.
Got it. Okay. Got some more questions, and also Dr. Cowett?
Yeah, and I guess it's just sort of a follow-up to the issue that you were just speaking to, Tula, and Danny, if you have any insight on it as well, in terms of the timing and the logistics and how that happens. So it sounds like if doctors, physicians, or whoever want to review the information that's being submitted about them, that they're not going to be notified by CMS directly that they will need to go in and look at this information on the website before it becomes publicly available. And then if they question or have a dispute that they want to make, they would in turn reach out to CMS somehow or another. Is that correct?
Not exactly. So we'll be notifying individuals about when they can come into the open payment system to register and then subsequently review and dispute. If there is a dispute, then that dispute is handled outside of CMS directly with industry. The system will allow you to notify industry that you have a dispute, and then industry will be able to acknowledge that dispute notification, and then you guys can begin a dialogue outside of the system. And then industry, if there's a resolution, industry will be submitting revised data. Now, if anything that is not resolved, it will still be published on the public website, but will be noted as disputed.
Oh, okay. Let me see here. I kind of have a bunch, so I'm just trying to make sure I don't
something. I'll just chime in on that. So I recently went to a meeting of companies that were talking about the Physician Payment Sunshine Act and how it was going to be implemented. And so it seems that the pharmaceutical and device companies are doing different things. Some of them are being very careful to communicate with the doctors ahead of time to let them know that they are sending this data to CMS. They haven't yet sent the detailed data to CMS, and we think that'll happen. From what Tula said, we'll hear soon within the next couple of weeks when that's going to happen. Before they send out detailed information, a lot of companies are directly communicating with the doctors and saying, hey, doc, we're going to be telling CMS that you got $200 in dinners from us over those 5 months. Do you agree with us? And they had their own little dispute resolution process because a lot of them don't want to, you know, alienate the doctors that they're working with. Other companies just have too many relationships to do that, and so there may be more disputes with companies like that.
Thank you. That's great. Another question is, how will CMS make sure consumers know how to interpret the different categories of payments? For example, there are several categories that relate to education in some kind of way. Will CMS define and explain each category or provide examples?
Great. That's a great question. Regardless of which particular category it is, whether it's one of the four education-related ones or anything in general, we do anticipate providing consumers and the general public with information to guide them. We did, as Danny mentioned, the Pew Charitable Trust was able to send us some suggested information, and we're taking that under consideration. So we do plan on providing information to give context around this. As I mentioned early on, CMS's role is primarily to remain neutral, but to provide context. We're not passing judgment whether an event was good or bad, but we are going to be remaining neutral, and we're going to provide the information necessary to consumers to make educational decisions about their health care using this data.
Okay.
You just kind of touched on it just now. Does CMS have materials that they would encourage physicians and teaching hospitals to utilize in talking with their patients about the information disclosed on the database? Or are there materials that you would point consumers to on the site to help them better understand the information?
So, again, thank you for that question. Right now, our site is primarily focused towards primarily focused towards industry at the moment, as well as physicians with providing them content. We plan on gearing up the site to make it more consumer-friendly closer to the September 30th deadline to make and provide more useful information for them. At this time, the only thing that I can refer consumers, which is just general information about program and program operations. So at this time, I wouldn't the site is not geared towards consumers, more for physicians and industry to make sure they comply with the program requirements.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, I think that one of the I just wanted to follow up with that. One of the important things you asked about is, what are consumers supposed to do? So once they see the amount of money, and let's assume that CMS is able to create some good explanation and good context sort of explanation for the consumers, so consumer understands what an honorarium is, what a gift is, what a consultation is, then you're armed with some information. And then you have a decision to make. Do you want to go to your doctor, who you just found out this information about, and have a conversation with him or her? And how do you have that conversation? It can be very intimidating for a patient to question the integrity of somebody that's can literally hold their life in their hands. So I know that I believe Community Catalyst and we are thinking about some good kinds of questions, some good suggestions for consumers. I know also that ProPublica, which is many of you know, a group that's been kind of like a mini Sunshine Act, mini open payment site. They've already aggregated a lot of these payments. If you go to ProPublica.org, I think, to their Dollars for Doc website, they have a number of questions that they recommend that patients ask their doctors if they learn that their doctors have received money from companies. And questions like, why have you received this money? Are there any generic versions of the drugs that you have been prescribing me that I should consider? Those kinds of things. So that can be a useful site.
Great, thank you. Couple more. How will the site allow consumers to look up their doctors? Will it list all doctors or only those who receive payments?
So the site will only include data for doctors that have received data, because we don't know. Industry would not be submitting data to us if there was not a transfer of value. So, again, only those doctors that have received a payment or transfer value will be in the database. And you will be allowed, the rule requires that the database, the data set, be downloadable, searchable, and aggregated. So you'll be able to look up your physician by name, by state. We're finalizing the actual search functionality right now, but that's only at a minimum name and state at the moment. We're exploring additional ones as well.
Tula, I have a question about that. When you say downloadable, does that kind of mean that researchers and journalists will be able to download all of the data and then create their own search functions? So if CMS
does not
have their own search function for specialty, for example, will it be possible for journalists, organizations, and others to create those search functions on their own?
They could, yes. Again, they can download the data and do whatever they want to do with it, essentially.
Okay.
But we'll have our own search capabilities as well as the ability to download the file as well.
Thanks.
And just to clarify, maybe you said this, will it be just as easy as somebody going to the website and plugging in their physician's name and the state or whatever to try to access that information?
That is the ideal, yes. That is ideally how we would like to do it. Because the data file is going to be a pretty big, as you can imagine, there's a lot of transfers of value out there that are going on. So we're still working out the technology. The only reason I'm fumbling a bit is because I'm not a technology guru. We're trying to make it as easy as possible to be able to download and get the data. So I think some magic needs to happen behind the scenes to make it seem seamless. But essentially, that is what the ultimate goal is, to make the user's experience as easy as possible to access and to be able to search as well.
Okay. I'm not sure that you've talked about this, but, how can the National Physicians Alliance or the American Medical Student Association spread the word about open payments becoming available when it becomes available?
Well, that's a great question, and we want to make sure you guys continue to spread the word about open payments. CMS has great inlets to providers out there that accept Medicare and even to providers that accept Medicaid and CHIP. However, those providers that we do not have access to are those that do not participate in public programs. So getting the message out, adopt the program, that this does exist. The last thing that we want physicians to do is be surprised about their name being in a database. So just continuing to create awareness about the program, and that we encourage physicians to go out there and to review their data.
And the operational date for the website is September 1st?
30th.
Okay, we have time for one or two more quick questions, Anne.
I think we've gone through everything that I've received so far, and I hesitate to just open up the line.
We had so many people on the call.
I'm also wondering, not that I want to put her on the spot because I don't think she was really prepared to speak, but I think Becky Martin might be on the phone, and I didn't know if she had anything that she wanted to add in terms of details regarding our website. I would just throw that out. She may not, but I just thought, since we have a minute or two.
Thanks, Anne. I would just emphasize that folks could check out the resources that we have that is available through the website at npalliance.org/conflict-free, and there folks can find links through to our web-recorded webinars, and some of those have CME available that can be filled out and printed, your certificate printed right there on site when you complete it, as well as these conflict-free leadership calls that we have recorded and available for download as podcasts or listening online, or you can download the call notes. And for this call, we will add the slides that Tula has available and links through to some of the resources that she's described here tonight also, as well as what Danny described. So thanks for the opportunity to give those resources a little plug.
And it's a current post after the call. Let me just repeat the help desk, or maybe Tula, would you repeat the help desk email for people, for if any further questions are heard of folks?
Sure. The email address is openpayments@cms.hhs.gov. The easiest way to find us on the web is if you Google us, Google Open Payments, two words, and CMS, and it'll be the first pop-up, the first search result that comes back. So highly encourage you guys to seek those two resources out as you need them. I would also strongly encourage you, again, to register for our listserv.
Okay, great. So if we don't have any further questions, let me just thank everyone, especially Tula and Dan, for being with us for your presentations and answering questions, and everybody for joining the call. Our next conflict-free call will be in approximately 2 months. Watch your email for the date and information, and we'll have the recordings and notes for this call posted on the NCLI, National Physicians Alliance website soon. And again, for more information, you can go to ncalliance.org/conflict-free. And for information on the AMSA Farm-Free Scorecard, www.amsascorecard.org. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today.
Thank you.